the podcast from Belmont Chapel in Exeter, sharing the story, living the life. For more information, go to belmontchapel.org.uk.
Right, we're looking at the Psalms. We're in a series on the Psalms, and today we're looking at happiness. Now, I did a little bit of research as to what happiness is, and according to the Oxford Dictionary, happiness is the state of being happy. So I hope that's cleared it up for everybody. At the moment, I wonder what makes you feel in a state of happiness. Perhaps it's England actually scoring a goal. Perhaps it's the sunshine that we've been enjoying the last couple of weeks. Perhaps it's a really huge bar of chocolate. Now, I wonder if you could chat to the person next to you and just say, what makes you feel happy? All right, well, there's obviously loads of things that make you feel happy. I wonder if anyone's brave enough to share what makes them feel happy. Being on a bicycle, yep. Sounds good, yes? Having a sleepover, cool. Good. Anything else that makes you happy? Yep. Great. Spending time with friends and family. There's loads of stuff that makes us feel happy. Now, this is a song that has been on the radio rather a lot, and now it's stopped making some people feel happy because they're fed up with listening to it. But it's a song, Because I'm Happy by Pharrell Williams. Now, this is the highest charting Oscar-nominated song in a decade. It sold over 1.3 million records. As my son pointed out, he must be very happy about that. But what do we do to find happiness? Do we perhaps have a new project, like a solar panel project, or a holiday that we're planning, or planning a wedding, or going shopping, shoe shopping, particularly good, I think. Or do we get ourselves a treat? Do we have tea and coffee at Dart's Farm? Or perhaps moving house? Well, a lady called Gretchen Rubin in America spent a whole year trying different activities to see if she could become happier. And her book, she then wrote it in a book called The Happiness Project, which became a bestseller and reached number one in the New York Times bestseller list. So she found material success. But I wonder if any of these things bring long-term happiness. In that song, the Pharrell Williams song, Because I'm Happy, it's from a film called Despicable Me 2. And the main character, if you haven't seen it, do watch it, it's fantastic. But the main character is called Gru, and he's happy because he realizes he's in love with his co-worker, Lucy. So he's really happy, and he joins in with all these people on his walk and just is really, really happy. But by the end of the song, he's sad because the girl that he loves is moving away to Australia. So he just had a fleeting glimpse of happiness. How do we lengthen the times of happiness? Should we, as Christians, always be happy? We've got God's love. He's with us. Should we always be happy? Well, it does depend, again, doesn't it, on what our definition of happiness actually is. Sometimes we can be a little bit oversimplistic and say, well, the world doesn't really understand what true happiness is. It's just into materialism. But as we can see from these deep philosophical cartoons here, happiness is walking in the grass on your bare feet. Happiness is spending time with your friends. So the rest of the world does know that happiness is on a deeper level than just superficial things. And in fact, there's a psychologist called Martin Seligman, and he has a definition of happiness. So the first part of happiness is pleasure. So that's like material and physical pleasure and enjoyment. But then there's a second stage, engagement. And this is a little bit deeper, and it's things and activities that require more investment and effort, but are more satisfying, such as relationships, job satisfaction, hobbies. I keep trying to persuade my daughter Emma that the more she practices, that then she'll be able to enjoy playing the pieces that she learns. And then there's meaning underneath that, that's deeper still, and that's an attachment to something larger than yourself or your family. And the larger the entity that you're attached to, the more meaning you have in your life. And he said that the most satisfied people are those who orient their pursuits towards all three. So all three of those things, not just the initial pleasure, but engagement and meaning. So with the greatest weight carried by engagement and meaning. The world knows that happiness isn't about what we have. Aristotle said, happiness is the meaning and the purpose of life, the whole aim and end of human existence. It's important for us then to understand what happiness is and how we can achieve it. For many, happiness is the contentment of knowing that you are loved, secure, and valued. Bridget Jones' Diary was on television last night, and there's lots bad about the film, but there's one lovely line in it where the main male character, Mr. Darcy, says to her, he's just trying to tell her that he likes her, and he says that he really likes her just the way she is. And it's a real powerful line because it's showing her she's valued for who she is. She's loved for who she is. And that's what we have in the Bible. We have that deep contentment of knowing that God values us. God loves us. Well, you may have seen really unhelpful cartoons like this. This is my life before Jesus. Very sad face. This is my life after Jesus. Very happy face. This is really unhelpful because it's so simplistic, isn't it? Do Christians have to be happy all the time? Do we walk around with a smiling beam like that? Often we beat ourselves up about not feeling happy. I should be happy. I'm a Christian. God loves me. But actually, we can sometimes have more difficult life experiences exactly because we are Christians, because we are taking up our cross each day. So we need to know what the Bible actually says rather than this just sticker philosophy. We need to look at our example of Jesus. Jesus wept. Jesus was angry. Jesus faced isolation. So we're going to be looking at Psalm 128. Now, those of you who are observant will notice it doesn't actually use the word happiness in the passage at all. So you might think, well, why have we called it happiness? Well, happiness, the word blessed, is often translated as happy. And lots of commentators don't like this because they say, well, that's not really a satisfactory translation because it's too narrow a focus on emotion. And blessed is so much more than that. But if we have in our minds, before we come to read it, if we have in our minds of the definition of happiness as so much more than just that initial pleasure, that initial emotion, then I think that can help us. Now, an introduction to this psalm is that, oh, I forgot a bit. The blessed is also used in the Bible in the New Testament in the Sermon on the Mount, where it says, blessed be the peacemakers, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. And in Billy Graham's book on the Sermon on the Mount, he entitled it, The Secret of Happiness. This is the secret of happiness. And Martin Lloyd-Jones, in his book on the Sermon on the Mount, he wrote, happiness is the great question confronting mankind. The whole world is longing for happiness. But it's tragic to see the ways in which people are seeking it. The vast majority, alas, are doing so in ways that are bound to produce misery. What does he mean? Well, we only have to look around us to see people seeking happiness. So often it's selfish pursuit. In a relationship, they only stay in it as long as it's good for them. Materialism, they're always seeking more. So this is Psalm 128, the secret of happiness. You might wonder why I've put that picture up there. Well, before we read the psalm, we need to understand what was happening to the people at the time. What's the context of this passage? Now, we know that this is part of our series of ascent. It's part of the psalms that were sung on the way up to the temple to Jerusalem. But what about what had been happening before that? Well, this was written post-exilic. You might think, well, why is history important? As a historian, I think history is very important. But why is it important here? It's important to understand their frame of mind. They had just been exiled. They'd been forced from their homes. Their country had fallen to an invading power. They'd seen massacres. They were living in fear. They had no certainty or stability. Everything they had was gone. It's a little like these citizens of Tikrit or Mosul at the moment. They've lost everything. Their house, their possessions, their money, their cars, their jobs, family members. They literally have nothing. Israel had just lived through that. But they'd had warnings. Part of their covenant with God was to walk in his ways, and God's part was to give them the land of Israel. But they rebelled against him. They lived in their own ways. They did their own thing. They took God for granted. And look what happened. They had warnings from the prophets, but they didn't listen. Then the unthinkable happened. They lost their land. They lost everything. So will they now listen to the Lord? Will they now return to him? When we lose everything, it does make us reassess, doesn't it, what is truly important. I doubt there are any of us who've been through this kind of situation. But it's a bit like when illness strikes. Suddenly everything else is immaterial. Jobs, holidays, careers, doesn't matter. We just want health. Israel had to reassess what was important to them. Where was their security? It was a huge wake-up call. As they return now to the temple, the psalmist encourages them and says, "This is what is important. This is what will bring you true happiness. This is how to get it." So let's read Psalm 128. It's on page 595 of the Church Bibles. "Blessed are all who fear the Lord, who walk in obedience to him. You will eat the fruit of your labor. Blessings and prosperity will be yours. Your wife will be like a fruitful vine within your house. Your children will be like olive shoots round your table. Yes, this will be the blessing for the man who fears the Lord. May the Lord bless you from Zion. May you see the prosperity of Jerusalem all the days of your life. May you live to see your children's children. Peace be on Israel." So what is the condition for happiness? What would bring them true happiness? Well, the psalmist says, "Blessed or happy are all who fear the Lord, who walk in obedience with him." So we're called to fear God. You might think, well, what kind of fear is that? Is that like being really, really scared of something? Well, it's more of a reverential awe. So we care about what God thinks. We respect and we honour him far more than the world. I wonder, do we do that? Do we worry more about what friends and work colleagues think than what God thinks? We've tended to lose that sense of reverential awe. We have God as our friend and support, but not as someone we're afraid of. Do we forget who this God is? He's the creator of the universe. He's all-powerful. He's holy. And sometimes the honor of being allowed into his presence is lost on us. Queen Esther, when she went into the king's presence without being summoned, she could have been sentenced to death if he wasn't pleased to see her. She knew that fear of going into someone's presence. We don't really have that, do we? It's a bit like if we went into the Queen's presence now, we might feel a little bit anxious or nervous about saying the wrong thing. Or perhaps if you're called into your boss's office or the head teacher's office. I'm often afraid of things. I'm afraid of most things, so I don't have a lot of issue with this. But I know for a lot of people, it's really hard to think of that sense of fear of what God thinks. When I lived in Russia, I used to love going to the Orthodox Cathedral in St. Petersburg. It was massive, and it had this huge dome, and you'd stand this tiny little speck underneath this massive dome and look up. And you got a real sense of God, of his power and his majesty in the vastness of that building. and a sense of my own insignificance, how tiny I was in comparison. And we need to work hard to keep that balance, don't we? We can come to God at any time. We can talk to him. But we need to remember who it is that we are coming to and not take him for granted. At the beginning of the Psalms, in Psalm 8, the psalmist writes, "When I consider your heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars which you have set in place, what are mere mortals that you are mindful of them, human beings that you care for them?" That's the amazing thing, isn't it? God is the one who set the stars in place. And yet he cares for each one of us. Israel had lost their fear of God. They had ignored his prophets. They had abandoned his laws. They had adapted to the world around them and taken on those views. I wonder, have we? We are to fear God, and fear is the attitude, but we're also to walk. Walk is the behavior that stems from that attitude, isn't it? If you fear the Lord, you will walk in his ways. It's like if you respect someone, you take on their advice. If you have a decision to make, you call your respected friend, your parent, your husband, your wife, and you walk in their ways. You follow their advice, their instructions. I think Christianity is often seen by outsiders as a list of rules and regulations, things you can't do, things you can do. But it's more like a set of instructions. It's like if you buy a hairdryer and it says in the instructions, don't use in the bath. Well, there's a reason for that, isn't there? Use it in the bath, you'll electrocute yourself. But it's the same with God, isn't it? He's given us these instructions to help us, to show us how we can live a better life. For example, he says, don't covet. Have you ever wondered, why is that in the Ten Commandments? Why is that such a biggie? Well, don't envy. Why? Because otherwise, we'll just end up feeling miserable. We'll think about what we have or haven't got, and then we can become bitter, and then that affects the whole of our life and all our relationships, and it can affect our witness. God understands completely how we react because he made us. Why do we not then listen? Why do we not then walk in his ways? So that's the condition for happiness. That will help us if we can fear God and walk in his ways. Now, if we read on in the Psalm 2 and 3, it talks about, well, what is this happiness? What is the heart of this happiness? You will eat the fruit of your labor. Blessing and prosperity will be yours. Your wife will be like a fruitful vine within your home. Your children will be like olive shoots round your table. Well, vine and olives were the staple products of Palestine. So that the psalmist was using pictures of things that were right around them. As they're walking on this pilgrimage, they would see olive trees. They would see vines. It's a visual picture. The vine was also in Israel a symbol of beauty and fruitfulness. And the olive tree was a symbol of strength. A picture like this of grapes, a laden vine, so loads and loads of grapes on a vine, is a picture of joy and fertility. It's a really clear illustration to them in the days before PowerPoint. They would have sons to carry on their name and to look after them in old age. It was hope and promise for the future. And in a primitive culture, that was what was important, to have sons who could look after you, who could carry on your name, to have vines and olives that would flourish and help them in their jobs. And I wonder now, what do we see as a blessing? Is it perhaps having a permanent contract at work? Is it having a good house, a good pension, so you can enjoy your retirement? We know of one teacher who worked one extra year to get the best possible pension, and he had the hardest year of his whole career. And he actually died within 3 weeks of finishing school. Didn't get to enjoy that pension he was working for. And the imagery here is all about highest hopes coming to fruition and a sense of security. So does this mean that happiness is material prosperity and a large family? Well, there's a real danger there, isn't there? There's a danger in taking this one or two verses but ignoring what the whole Bible says. We need to read the Bible as a whole. We need to understand what it's saying. In the Old Testament, there was a connection between material blessing and following God in terms of the land. He promised them the land as part of the covenant. And here, this is an idyllic picture of what blessing looks like. The Old Testament speaks in a language to which a primitive culture would understand and can see. It's a visual demonstration of God's blessing. And in the Hebrew, it doesn't say it's a guarantee. The word that's included is surely. Surely, this is the life that God will bless. The Old Testament covenant promise is God will bless them and give them the land. But within the Old Testament, there is a recognition that wealth itself is not satisfying. Ecclesiastes, you can read, and it goes through and says, everything was meaningless, a chasing after the wind. And also in the Old Testament, there's a recognition, bad situations happen to good people. You just read the book of Job to see that. And the New Testament, there's greater emphasis on eternal blessing and the blessing of strength and peace now. There's many things that can rob us of happiness. It may be that you're not feeling at all happy this morning. But for some of us, mental illness can rob us of happiness. For some of us, we need medication and counselling to work things through. But for others, there are things we can do to help. Quite often, we seek more. We don't see what we have and are grateful for it. George Alagiah wrote in a book about Africa, if you have a roof over your head, food on your table, a doctor who will not charge you when you are ill, and a school that does not depend on your ability to pay, then, my friend, you are rich. I wonder if we actually feel rich. Do we realize what we have? I know Phil Taylor, whenever he comes back from South Africa, who talks about the people he meets there and says, it's amazing the joy that they have when they have absolutely nothing. And Paul writes, I have learnt to be content, whatever the circumstances, whether in want or in plenty. The other quote on the screen is from a US broadcaster, and he said, a happy person is not a person in a certain set of circumstances, but rather a person with a certain set of attitudes. When I was at Bible college, we had a quiet day once every term, and we had a whole day. We were supposed to spend a whole day in quiet and prayer and reading the Bible. And one lecturer suggested that we wrote down 10 things that we were grateful for and then prayed through them and thanked God for each thing. And then he said, write down 10 more and pray again. And then write down 10 more and pray again. It's amazing how that affects your mood. How you just going through it and praying and thanking God reminds you how much God has done for you. I think we live in a world where it's always showing us we need something more, but actually we have so much. And you may notice in your focus there's a big blank space. It's not a mistake. It's a space for you to write 10 things that you are thankful to God for. So we'll have a moment at the end where you can do that, or take it away and do that in your quiet time. And I'm sure it will help you as it's helped me. Often we can rob ourselves of happiness because of sin too. As we've already said, envy can lead to unhappiness because we're looking so much at what other people have and saying, well, if only I had that, then I would be happy. Fear can lead to unhappiness. It can prevent us from serving God. Hurt, unforgiveness can prevent us from moving on. Bitterness can eat us up and prevent us from loving others. We need to talk to God today about what is preventing our happiness. Well, there is a consequence to our happiness too, as it goes on in the psalm. In verse 5 and 6, it talks about the Lord blessing Zion and Jerusalem and there being peace. Now, Joel Allen, helpfully a couple of weeks ago, put up this picture of a circle, a throne, and asked us whether we had Jesus on the throne of our lives or whether we were. And that's a real challenge. And it's not easy. Don't sit there and think, well, actually, I'm the kind of person who finds it really hard. It's so easy for everybody else in this church. It's not easy. If we're honest, with ourselves and with God, it is not easy. For each one of us, there's areas in our life where we need to make sure God is on the throne and not us. But if it is like this, then that affects our entire relationships. If God is on the throne of our life and not ourselves, it affects the relationships in our families, and it can affect our whole community. If Christ is at the throne of our life, it will impact everybody else around us. And for Israel, their picture was their covenant with God. It's like a triangle. There's God at the top, then there's the people of Israel, and then there's their land. And they had a covenant. And their family future was tied up with their nation, as they'd just seen in the exile. Their individual piety affects their family, which in turn affected their whole nation. And this was particularly personal, as we've seen, because it was post-exilic. So it's after they've been exiled. They've seen Jerusalem fall. They've seen war in Israel. They want to know, what can they do to stop this ever, ever happening again? Israel needed to have the Lord their God and the throne of their lives. But they just paid lip service to him. They'd taken him for granted. They'd taken it for granted that he would look after them. Isn't it interesting? As a nation, we don't really listen to God. But if things go wrong, people cry out to God and ask where he was. We've just celebrated the anniversary of D-Day, and the night before D-Day, the king called for the people of this country to pray for victory. We had victory. But since then, our nation has consistently rejected God and his ways and gone our own way. What about us? Do we fear God? Do we walk in his ways? Or do we just pay lip service to him? I was a little bit concerned because last week's talk was on joy. This week's talk's on happiness. I thought that's kind of similar. But if you weren't here last week, do listen to it. It was fantastic. And Johnny's testimony, thank you, Johnny, was incredibly powerful and challenging. Joy isn't an emotion, but it's knowing and remembering that God has done great things for us. And I would say happiness is that too. How can we have happiness? By fearing God and walking in his ways. The heart of happiness, God will bless us. The consequence of happiness, he will bring us deep joy and bring joy to the world around us. And as a community, we can help each other experience this. In times of pain, in times of trouble, as we've said, it's okay not to feel happy all the time. We're not going to. 5 years ago, Colin had a stroke when we were on holiday in Italy and ended up in hospital. It wasn't a moment for happiness. But we had friends from Belmont, especially John Campbell, who phoned us every single day that Colin was in hospital to see if we were okay. And that was an amazing example of God's care and love in a moment of trouble. And we felt an incredible peace, or I felt an incredible peace at that time, knowing that God was with us and knowing that my family of Christian friends were praying for us. And as we've seen with that Life Group DVD, life groups can keep us going in times of trouble. Just this week, I had a meltdown on Thursday, and one of my life group was there to help me and to talk me through and help me. And that was fantastic. And that's what we can do as a body. We can be God's strength and support to each other. Now, what we're going to do is spend some time in quiet, and then I will pray. And then we're going to sing a song. And it's for this I have Jesus. Now, Graham Kendrick wrote this song because he had a friend who'd been paralyzed and was in constant pain. He asked them, "How do you cope?" And the friend replied, "For this, I have Jesus." And it's a wonderful reminder that whether you're going through fantastic times and feeling full of joy and happiness, or whether you're going through difficult times, we have Jesus with us, walking alongside us. That is what the Bible promises, that he will be with us every single day. And we as a community can be that for each other too. So we're going to have a time of quiet. Maybe just think about whether there's any areas in your life where you're robbing yourself of happiness, or perhaps write down some of those things that you're grateful for. Then I'll pray, and then I'll hand over to the band and we'll sing together.